one of the hardest things that some people have to figure out how to overcome. My household was full of abuse and alcoholism. Unfortunately, I was a victim to all of that.
I'm here today with a new friend, Mary Grothy. You're a faith-based leader, celebrated keynote speaker, best-selling author, love the book.
I got into some bad professions and I got into some bad habits. My ego swelled and I became addicted to the success. I was winning awards. I was getting interviews in media. I was somebody people wanted to be. And I think that God had enough.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Real Business Connections. I'm here today with a new friend, the amazing Mary Grothy. Mary, what's happening?
Hey, it's snowing. That's what's happening right now.
It is snowing. And so you're actually going to come out, this episode's going to come out the last week of December. So by then, we're going to have plenty of snow, but it's November. Like, I guess I should be used to it by now, right?
Oh my gosh. We got our first snow a couple of weeks ago and got hit with a doozy. It was 10 inches on our first snow. Cars were facing the wrong direction on the highway. It took us 30 minutes to do a 10-minute drive. And oh, so many newbies trying to figure it out here in Colorado. But it was a beautiful first snow and we're officially getting our second right now. So yeah, get used to it. I prefer sun and beaches and warmth and pools. I live in the wrong state for that.
At least 10% of people are super excited. They've got their skis, they've got their sleds, they're ready to go. But so Mary, I know way too much about you because I read your book and it was very unveiling. It was very vulnerable. I really appreciate that. We'll get into your story, but we'll give the quick intro for the audience member that maybe doesn't know Mary yet. And you're on the up, so soon everyone's going to know you. But for someone who doesn't know Mary just yet, you're a faith-based leader, celebrated keynote speaker, best-selling author, love the book, whose story is one of true resilience, overcoming a troubled past and a history filled with hardship and failure. Mary rose rapidly in the corporate world, really defying all odds, breaking extensive sales records. And your message today underscores the power of integrating personal faith into professional endeavors. You're passionately telling this story in your book that I just read. I know you have another one coming up in 2015, but A Destination Remarkable, Surviving the Dark Side of Success. Mm-hmm. And one thing I pinpointed from that book that really spoke to me was what you have written on your arm, that long tattoo.
Yes.
It's going to be hard for us to read it, but what's on your arm and why, Mary?
Be who you could have become. I had a dream one night that I prayed to have because I was dealing with a lot of anxiety and fear and depression, vocational confusion, trying to figure out the calling and purpose on my life. I was a CEO at the time, thinking I'm doing the right thing, but questioning if I'm honoring what God created me for. And I heard of a celebrity smoking the venom of a toad and creating this out-of-body experience where it's almost as if you die, you become one with the creator, and you have this interaction with the creator, and it's supposed to just shed years of anxiety and fear and worry and doubt, and you're coming to and feeling like a new person. And I read multiple celebrities have done this. Of course, it's illegal. You have to have this guided experience. And I thought to myself, okay, I want that, but without having to do something illegal and go to California. So I prayed and prayed and I prayed for that same experience. And I had a dream. I had an incredibly vivid dream. And in that dream, it was my husband, myself, and my son. And you know those old cartoons where the bazooka and they'd shoot and the bodies like holes. And we were all cartoon characters, and a cartoon came in with a bazooka, fired the gun, and all of our outward bodies did like the like deflation, right? The hole burst open and we all deflated as characters. And what was revealed at that point, my husband and son exited the dream at this point, but I was a bright light. I was this bright light that came out of this deflated outer shell body. And all of a sudden I'm seeing still how I see today, like in my normal body, but I have this bright light around me and I'm in like a forest, like a big, but a very lush forest, like water and the canopy of the trees. And all of a sudden I'm standing here face to face with the creator, with God himself, not in a physical form, but in a spirit presence. And he says, clear as day to me, that we will meet again and we will have this conversation again. And he will reveal to me what could have been, and that he was preparing me to avoid the biggest disappointment and regret that I would have is when he reveals to me how easy it truly was to follow him and further the kingdom and to unapologetically lead people to him, and would help me see how hard I made it. And that the biggest regret I would have in that moment was that I thought it was harder than it was, and that I wasn't going to be carrying out the calling on my life and stewarding what he had given me with this platform and everything else that he has given me. So when I woke up, I was in a sheer, like, one, just grateful, but two, panic of I've got to figure my life out. And it came to me of I need to be who I could have become. I don't want to be sitting there on that last day and have it revealed. I want what's revealed to be who I am. I want the Lord to say, good and faithful servant. I'm in corporate America. I just sold my company. I'm a former CEO. I'm a full-time chief revenue officer. I'm not in ministry. I'm in the thick of the lion's den as a Christian woman, which is not a real welcome thing to be in corporate America, just so we're clear. But this is who I was created to be. This is why I'm here. And I'm here to spread the good news of the gospel. And so that is why I just tattooed down my arm to be who I could have become. Because by golly, I'm not going to be looking at a stranger. And that's my commitment to myself and to God. And I'm here to carry out the kingdom. So there you go. Long story, arm tattoo.
I love it. And it's a great reminder. Down the road, when you look in the mirror, you're going to recognize that woman versus wondering who that woman was. Who we'll work to where you got to where you are today in a second, but like, where are you now in your career and where are you going with it? You're just getting started, right?
Thanks.
Yeah, that's overwhelming to think about sometimes, right?
It is. I'm about to turn 40. I got a really early start in my career. And as I sit here today, I've been a two-time founder. I had an exit earlier this year, which I'm very proud of, after growing and scaling a consulting firm. And 5 years was able to exit. I took a full-time role with one of my clients. They were a two-time client, and I loved working with them the first time around. I was looking for a quieter season. For anybody who's a founder CEO and you're in a scale-up, you know that it's like all you do all day, every day. And you're just, it's exhausting. And I was exhausted. The market had turned at the end of 22 and running the business became harder. And I didn't have the steam to carry it through. And I was becoming disengaged and feeling of defeat. I wanted to go into a quieter season. So I actually resigned as CEO, put in an unbelievable CEO while I still owned the company, took this chief revenue officer position with my client as a full-time role. And then a few months later was able to sell the company. So I'm knocking on about a year of being in this role, and it's tremendous to be in a leadership position with a great fast-growing company. Cause that's where I like to be. I'm a builder, and that's what I get to do full-time right now.
You get to build, you get to scale, you get to help drive revenue. You're good at that.
It's fun. It's a bigger company than what mine was. Not much bigger, but it's bigger. We're on the 20 to 50 million scale journey, and I like it.
And you're doing great, but it wasn't always pretty. People like to sometimes make it seem easier and prettier than it is. You know, got in trouble when I was a kid, found God, learned sales. Now I'm wealthy. It's really not that simple, is it? Well, when you were a child, where did you feel like you were going to be? Did you want to be an astronaut, a ballerina? Like, where did you feel like Mary would be when you were a child?
Yeah, 100% ballerina. I grew up in the performing arts. My dad was an opera singer and an actor. He's been in a lot of big movies. And my mom was a choral director and a pianist, classical pianist. She's brilliant on the piano, so talented. And they formed a performing arts school when I was 3 years old in Northwest Indiana. And I was the first student to sign up for ballet, and I loved it. That became my passion. I also started acting and singing at a very young age and performed in several musicals and theater productions as a very, very young child. I grew up on the stage. I think that's why I enjoy being a public speaker, a keynote speaker. It's great for me. I have a lot of comfort on the stage. I get a lot of energy from the audience reaction, but I've had that since I was a wee little one. But I had crazy just upbringing from age 3 to age 14 in this performing arts school. And yes, the dream was to be a professional dancer. I was a triple threat, actor, singer, dancer, but dance was my passion. And that was the greatest of my talents. And that's the direction I was going to go. That's the glamorous side of my childhood. The not so glamorous side was, unfortunately, my household was full of abuse and alcoholism and demons. It was a very, is one of the hardest things that some people have to figure out how to overcome. What's ingrained in our DNA is scary, and it leads to potential destructive and tumultuous and toxic lifestyles of our own. It leads to codependency and relationships and a warped understanding of what love is. Unfortunately, I was a victim to all of that and didn't really get it right for a lot of years. In my high school years, I was searching for any sense of belonging and love. My parents lost everything in the business when I was 14. They fled after stealing money from the community and had a lot of transgressions. The answer to that was to flee. I left everything that I knew at 14 years old after watching off all of our belongings get auctioned off under a red and white tent in our backyard. We drove halfway across the country to Boulder, Colorado. I knew no one. And I also learned that my parents were filing for bankruptcy and we had no money. And then my brother and I were going to have to support ourselves. I couldn't work at 14, but as soon as I turned 15, which is just a couple of months after we moved, I became a worker in supporting myself. That first year was very difficult because as a 15-year-old, my mom had to co-sign on my bank account, which means she had access to my money. And unfortunately, she had really bad habits. And she took that money. So I stole clothes. I stole food in order to survive for a year. And once I turned 16, she wasn't able to be on that bank account anymore. And I really started to build my life. I've been independent and working since I was 16, and I had a beautiful future painted for myself. When I was 18, however, big pivot. I was in a bad car accident just a month before I graduated high school. I had a 4.2 GPA. I was graduating with honors in the top 10% of my class. I was a performer dancing on the dance team. I had a scholarship to CU Boulder for dance and also MCDB so that I could pursue a medical degree after my amazing years of being a professional dancer that I saw in my future. But that was all taken away right before I graduated high school. And when that vision and that dream left, and the reality of what I was left with was nothing. I had no self-esteem, no self-worth, no faith, no ability as I was laid up, couldn't walk. And I entered into the four darkest years of my life. Unfortunately, this world will rush to swoop up a broken little young lady. I got in with the wrong crowd. I got into some bad professions and I got into some bad habits. And by the good grace of God, I didn't know him yet, but I survived those 4 years. I didn't die. And I didn't end up in jail, although I deserved both of those things. I was married to an abusive man. I met him when I was 19. I married into what I knew. It felt comfortable. But I was able to break free from that with the help of my first corporate job at 22 years old. I read an ad in the newspaper. I didn't have a degree. I didn't have anything going for me. And I read an ad about a job as an administrative assistant with a payroll company. I didn't know what any of those things were, but it was close to my house. It was four miles away. It's a 7-minute drive. And my abusive ex-husband, if he was going to allow me to do any sort of work, was okay with that commute because it could keep me close to home. I interviewed for the job, and against that sales manager's better judgment, he gave it to me. And that man changed my life. The company changed my life. I stepped into a profession that apparently I was good at. The company paid for me to get my college degree. That manager and another manager in the company moved me out of my house with the abusive ex-husband and set me into a safe zone. Paid for the attorney to work through my divorce and help me get my legs underneath me. It was really well-timed with assumed promotion into a sales role and not just a sales assistant, which immediately came with an increase in the base salary. I bought a really nice-looking suit. I went to corporate for 2 weeks. I did my training, and I came back, and my life changed. I became the number one rep in 30 days. My quota that year was $150,000. I sold $758,000 in revenue, which is more than number two and three combined. I made more money that year than I knew what to do with. Thankfully, I was coming from poverty, so I knew how to save and be smart. Unfortunately, bad habits came back. My ego swelled, and I became addicted to the success. I had so many holes and wounds inside of me that I never took time to heal. And all of a sudden, I found out I could sell and that I can make money and that people liked me. I had the rankings, the recognition, the crystal, the awards, the award trips, the happy hours, and a bunch of people wanting to be me. No one had ever wanted to be me up until that point. But I was it. I made it. And I became addicted to it, and I turned into a bit of a monster. I became an alcoholic, just like my mother. Work hard, play hard. And I led myself into a very destructive lifestyle. I ended up leaving that payroll company after two number one finishes. I took a VP of sales and marketing job with one of my clients because my ego was so swelled. Oh, if I can do that, look at what else I can do. And guess what I did? I was successful. I helped scale a company 4X in 7 months. Sounds more impressive than it was. They were small. But I started my first company at age 28. I'm like, if I can be a number one salesperson and scale a company, I can be a thing to a lot of people. And boy, did that feel good to all those holes and wounds that I had. So I started my first company at 28, and I set on the journey to help 36 entrepreneurs scale their companies, help them with their business plan, their go-to-market, help hire people, help them become profitable. And boy, was it fun. And you know, as soon as I was done working for the day, and not even always when I was done working, but I'd start with those martinis, the Cheetos, the destructive personal behaviors I had on dating apps, and always having a pipeline full of dates. And I'd pass out drunk and wake up the next day and think I was so impressive. And I had all these people who couldn't believe I wasn't even 30 years old yet. And look at the life and the career that I had. I did everything that the world was feeding me, telling me I was going to be something and be someone. I was winning awards. I was getting interviews and media. I was somebody people wanted to be. And on the inside, I was a broken, devastated monster. And I think that God had enough. Because he has such good plans for me, as he does for everyone. And it was time for him to wake me up. And on May 25th, 2012, I went out for a night of partying, celebrating a really exciting day, all the success I was having with my clients and my company and all the money I'm making. And I go to the bar in some crop top t-shirt and my low-cut jeans, singing karaoke, acting like I'm just some goddess. And I was humbled that night when I got behind the wheel of my car and I drove my car into my neighbor's front porch. That moment of panic set in when my car was high centered and I couldn't over a retaining wall and I couldn't back it out. I couldn't hide what I did, just like I had been hiding the bad behavior that I had had for years prior. And my darkness had to be exposed. And I'm so grateful for it. As I sat in jail with contusions and a concussion, as I was sitting sobering up and facing the reality that I had to face, finally had to face my issues. And as hard as it was, I was so grateful that that day had come because I was exhausted. I did everything the world told me to do. And I was a disaster. And I sobered up and I paid all my fines and I did my community service and I wore my ankle bracelet and I had a breathalyzer in my car, just so embarrassing. And I did my time. I went through therapy. Praise the Lord. I finally understood how I was raised and the effects of that. And being raised by an alcoholic parent, I finally was able to identify and see and understand the holes and wounds that were inside of me and how I was trying to heal them through things that would never heal them. I finally started the path to gain clarity and take the clutter and crap out of my life. And then my girlfriend invited me to church. And I thought, why not? You know, I've exhausted everything else. Why not try? Why not go to church? And leading up to that was Christmas Day, same year, 2012. I woke up in the morning and I was ready. I was ready to live my life different. And I went to my friend's house, who was a former pastor, and I sat outside texting awkwardly. He's like, where are you and what are you doing? It's like, I'm outside your door. And he let me in and I had nothing left. I could barely walk. I just was on my knees on his entryway. And I said, there has to be a different way to live. I can't do this. And he just opened the Bible and that's where we started. Page one. And from that day, and then I went to church with my girlfriend and I gave my life to the Lord. And I said that I had exhausted everything and I tried everything and it wasn't good enough. And that day, my life forever changed. And something so remarkable happened in my 30s. I was given the chance to relive the same life I had lived in my 20s, but as a woman of faith, I ran my business for a little bit longer, but I met my now husband and I realized I was not mature enough yet to be a powerful business leader. And I needed to gain more experience. So I closed down the business. I went back to the exact same payroll sales job with the majority of the exact same people, same territory, same clients. And I came back as a changed woman and I redid my career as a woman of faith. I honored people. I didn't steamroll over them. I didn't manipulate situations to gain a good outcome. I did it honorably with integrity. I had a phenomenal 3-year sales career. I sold millions in revenue. I got married. I had my baby and I took a 6-figure commission check and I was given the opportunity to start my second company, this time with the Lord by my side. A lot more maturity and wisdom and experience. And we knocked it out of the park. I started this company. I scaled it to $5 million in 4 years. I had 28 people at the peak. I never took on debt. I won awards. That's not to say that there weren't dozens more ups and downs, but I got to tell you, it's far different navigating challenges with the Lord by my side and the Holy Spirit in my heart than trying to do it on my own. And even though I had rough days, those were some of my favorite days because I was in such companionship with our Creator, and I have never felt more loved and supported and carried through that. And I'm a firm believer that I can't be who I'm meant to be in the next stage of my life if I don't go through the refinement that I need to go through now in order to be the next version of myself. And then at the end of the day, I'm on a path to be who I could have become, right? So that gives you a little bit more of the background of the success and how I got through it.
I teared up. Thank you for sharing your story. One statement you made that I loved was my darkness was exposed. And I think you having the authenticity to share that and share your story. Just in you telling your story helps people like me, possibly the listener, start to expose their own darkness. And you mentioned you did a refinement process. God played a role in this.
Yeah.
So did Mary. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about what that refinement process looked like, because when you mentioned how you went back to the same company, I was immediately nervous for you. I'm like, you're going to go back to the culture that led you, and it's nothing against the company. It's just you were in that circumstance and things went poor, and now you're going back to that circumstance. Some people might feel like that's playing with fire, but you were doing a refinement process.
Yes. Well,
what did you could just pick a single day. I think it's fun to get really microscopic. Yeah. What would a day look like, and how was a single day different than it would have looked 5 years prior?
A single day, when I took that payroll sales job back over, it was so different in how I even started my day. Prior, the first time I did that role, I woke up with so much survivalist mentality that I needed to get to the office as fast, as quickly as possible, to run through my tasks so fast so that I could have as much free time as possible to do revenue generating activities. The fear that I had of not succeeding, not winning the day, was what fueled the intention and the activities. I was coming from a scarcity mindset, which a lot of people will write about a scarcity mindset that it actually doesn't yield good outcomes. But my scarcity from a survivalist viewpoint was the fear of, if I didn't overperform, overachieve, overdo everything, then I wouldn't win the day. And so I was always unsettled, nervous, anxious, and constantly striving, which is exhausting, but it worked for me for 5 years. When I was in my early 20s, I had a lot more energy than I do now.
By the way, Mary, most people couldn't do that. You are a rare breed. Most people would burn out, and your success in itself is a whole nother conversation. I think you're a rare breed. I think you're incredible, but I want to pinpoint, most people are like, oh my God, I would crumble, Mary. I can't believe you did it.
Well, look, I've been told that by managers, mentors, peers, that I'm a different breed. And I understand that, but you know, I am only who I am. Yes. And I don't know a different way, but I have had to dial it back for a lot of people that I work with. One of the biggest mistakes, I'll get back to your answer in a second, but one of the biggest mistakes I made when I built my company was I thought other people were like me, and I would build performance expectations around this level of activity and hustle and grind. And when I realized the average person truly can't operate at this level, my numbers were off, my forecasts were off. And I realized I needed to build projections differently when it wasn't me and it was others. And that was a hard realization for me, because like I said, I am only who I am. And this is only how I know how to get work done. And it's weird for me when other people don't do it this way, even though it's weird to them that I would do it this way. But to answer your question, that was how I approached the role. But when I came in as a woman of faith, oh gosh, I'd wake up in the morning with so much peace in my heart that I already knew my identity and my worth. Whether I was successful today or not, that was just what was going to happen today. And that was already written. But what I was firm in understanding is that I was loved and that I was worthy and that God created me for a purpose, and that the calling on my life is never going to be in a job, in an outcome, in a trophy, earn an award. But when I became a Christian woman, my North Star became loving thy neighbor, extending grace and mercy to others that had been extended to me when I didn't deserve it. To be the love and light of the Lord, which a lot of people who don't understand Christianity or don't know what it is, or they're maybe Christian curious, maybe they've been hurt by Christians. I've seen Christians who go to church on Sundays and they're jerk people. And I'm like, if that's Christianity, I don't want anything to do with that. So like, I understand if some of the stuff I'm talking about right now, you're like, okay, this is super weird, and I don't know that I want to listen to the rest of this podcast. What I want to tell you is, at the core, Christianity is how Jesus walked the earth. And that's love and light, mercy, grace, kindness, forgiveness, joy, peace, if I didn't already say it. Those are the fruits of the Spirit. And I can be those things to others. And so that was my North Star. I just happened to be a really great salesperson. But I was a lover of people the second time around, and I was kind. And that's not what I was the first time. With that as my North Star, I knew mechanically how to do the job, but my heart was not hardened. My heart was whole and happy and healthy. And so I approached this role with such an optimism and joy and light pouring out of me. It was infectious for other people. And so whereas before it was a survivalist mentality, I still know how to hustle. I still know how to work hard. I mechanically know how to do the things to time manage my day and prioritize and pre-call plan and do a one call close and be brilliant in sales and uncover hidden decision makers and all that stuff that great salespeople need to do, augment the value of the deal, sell it in phases, whatever. I can do all that stuff. But I happen to be this time around somebody people were aspiring to be, somebody people wanted to do business with. And that allowed me to not have to work as hard and to still get great outcomes because I was actually a person people wanted to be around and give business to. So I was able to exceed at a completely different level. But the way I approached my day, completely different in the two different chapters of my life.
Not working as hard to get a better outcome sounds pretty good, right? your story, this is a small digression, but it reminded me of an analogy. A mentor of mine, Renee Rodriguez, he's been on the podcast twice. He's incredible. But he was telling this story just like yesterday, and I'm putting it together here. But to start, to kind of set it up, like a lot of people, especially in sales, it's like, you know, sell me this pen. Or it's the people are like, I'm so confident that I could sell water to a drowning man. And what Renee was talking in his metaphor was, if you see a drowning person, you throw them a life jacket, not because they're a lead, not because they're a prospect, because they're drowning and they need help. And what happens when you throw someone a life jacket because they need help, you help them. And the moment you need a life jacket, they throw you one. So everybody here, not everybody, but a lot of people in sales are thinking like, how do I learn how to sell water to a drowning man? What you're talking about is how do I learn how to give people more life jackets? Yes. And if I give more people life jackets, I'm going to have a prosperous life, correct?
So beautifully said. Yeah, let's do it.
I took it from Renee. I'm wondering, because another thing you taught, we kind of digressed, but you talked about like the shoulds, like I'm this way, so my team should do it this way because I'm this way and I understand this. And even like having, I'm going through this right now. So if you saw me 6 months ago, I was a hot wreck, but I was a mess, but I wore a great mask and I looked awesome on social media. And at the time of this recording, I'm just over 75 days. Wait, I'm over 100 days sober. I've been with a personal trainer just over 80 days and I feel great. And I started to realize that I can go to a happy hour and not drink.
Oh yeah.
I can go to a concert and not drink. I used to binge drink. And there's a lot of shoulds. Like if I'm going to happy hour, part of the custom is to drink wine, to have a cocktail. You want a high-end bourbon. Part of going to a concert, that again is shoulds. It's I should drink here. People should be like me. I'm just curious from your perspective. I know this is a random question. Like, where do you go to answers now? I presume God. What does that process look like though? Like, because people are going to tell you things. This is my point. People are going to tell me things. People are going to tell all of us things. How do you discern and make the right decision based on who Mary is, who Ben is?
Let's talk about discernment. The first place that is so good to go look that was a big learning experience for me was in the Bible. I used to mock Christianity and I had never cracked open the Bible. You would have never have seen me reading that. I thought it was just a whole bunch of words I wouldn't understand written in like Shakespearean language. And when I opened the Bible and started to read it, it was profound to me how good it was. I'm like, no wonder they call it the good book. Specifically in Proverbs. I can get lost in Proverbs because it is the guidebook on how to live your life in a very honorable way. It helped me understand what was full of wisdom, what was full of foolishness. It gave me such black and white, clear understanding of what was honoring to God and what was not. That became my truth for discernment and understanding the value of weighing the options and the decisions that I, and the choices and the decision that I had to make. Also discerning, I'm an idea generator, I'm a visionary. So just discerning all the flood of ideas that I get all the time, which happened a lot when I was running both of my companies. It happens a lot right now, but I have more guardrails around my visionary abilities in my role. But the Bible was always good for me because I wanted to ask myself if it was good for me and good for others and honoring to the Lord, and would it move the needle in what I had in my life at that moment in time. But the next thing that helped me out tremendously is I had a coach. And this coach, his name is Doug. I write about him a lot in my book. He actually wrote the foreword to my book. He really helped change my life. He helped me separate stories from facts. And that is one of the greatest levels of discernment tactics that has served me. When information comes to me, I need to ask, am I telling myself a story or is this truth? And I need to separate it. So let's paint a picture. Someone holds up a bag of chips right now. What comes to your mind if I'm holding up a delicious bag of chips? What would you say?
I'm going to eat the whole thing.
Okay. I'm going to look at it and say, no way, Jose, not going in my body. I will absolutely not consume that. I'm still in my fasting hours. I wouldn't eat that anyway. Is it gluten-free? What's in there? Okay. It was a bag of chips. Why did you and I come up with two completely different stories? And so that's what my coach taught me, is it's just a bag of chips. Everything else that comes after that is being fabricated in my mind. And that can affect our discernment. There's also, when we use discernment in different scenarios, let's talk specifically about making a decision to do something. The decision to actually do it is very emotional, but once you've made the decision to do it, then you can go into a clear mindset of the how is it going to get done and get accomplished? There's discernment on both sides of that. But what I have found is great discernment in the front part of should I do it or not is the part that is so critical, because we're talking about the shoulds, right? How do we have that discernment? It's right there in the most meaty of the emotional states that we can be in, that if we can separate the story from the facts and understand the impact of the decision, if we choose to do it, what are the long-term consequences? Because ideally, if we know that there are sometimes our shorter-term consequences that have greater long-term gain, and vice versa. So if I am in the moment, I have no self-control and I want to indulge and I'm going to eat the bag of chips, that unfortunately, that type of lifestyle and behavior can lead to an outcome that I don't want and has longer term consequences. But if I take the consequent short term where I have to turn down something I really want and I can get through that emotional moment and I have the discernment to say, just because I can doesn't mean I should. Just because I can eat the bag of chips doesn't mean I should. And I don't, I actually gain so much for my future self. And so it's just understanding that opportunity cost. But my coach helped me through that, which is great. The last thing that I learned is to have that moment of breath when I'm debating the should. If I can create the space, the power is actually between the stimuli and the response. So if I create space, I create power for myself. And if I take that breath, that self-control increases, the ability to reduce any triggered emotions because I'm separating stories from facts. That space creates the power. And that's where discernment can be welcomed and come in and be extremely powerful.
I love what a like actionable process. I love this because even when you mentioned the bag of chips, a delicious bag of chips, who cares if it's delicious? I'm not eating it because I've made this decision not to. And what kind of confidence do you gain by making those discerned decisions? Like I can only imagine you're more, you were already confident, but are you more confident?
Exactly. I feel so right and certain, and there's so much power. And whenever we step into our power, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's called power for a reason. I feel like it builds this force field around myself. And every time I make that good decision and I use that discernment, it's unbelievable the outcome that could come. That could be resisting having a drink. It could be choosing to wake up and not hitting the snooze. It could be turning down a business deal because you can tell that there's some red flags in the opportunity cost. Even though that revenue feels really good today, you can already see that this is going to be a problem customer that might suck down your margins and be a problem for your team members, which that has a snowball effect because it hurts their enjoyment in their role. And you definitely don't want to aid in any loss of a team member, and you want to focus on retention. So with that, there's so much power in that space. And when you do it one time, you gain the confidence. You're like, oh, wait, I'm still here. I survived. You mean I can do hard things? I can make tough decisions? I can rest and sit in that power? Yes, you can overcome that immediate trigger reactive feeling of the should.
You can overcome it. And I can only imagine it's a different kind of confidence. I like cringed at my own bad joke. Like, you were confident. How can you be more confident? But I noticed how, like, even at the end, just looking at, like, you're comfortable in your body. My experience just talking to you is you feel physiologically at peace. You don't need to be aggressive to be confident. You feel very just comfortable and relaxed and at peace, which is kind of hard for people to reach at times. Like, we spend our time, we do the meditation and we have the app and we go to the yoga and but we don't feel at peace. And to actually get to that level where you feel at peace, I think, is a beautiful thing.
It is. And I'd love to expand on that and tell you it's all about ascension. Ever since that out of body experience that I had in my dream, where I feel like I was this ball of light, one-to-one with the creator, heard him clear as day. I don't know if I'll always remember it, but I still can feel, I can feel in that moment, the fact that I am in an outer shell, that this human body that I've been given while the time that I'm on earth is my physical form while I'm on earth. I believe that there's life after this. I believe in heaven. I believe in eternity. With that, I believe that this is an earthly body that I have been given while I am here. And there is something inside of me that's going to live on when this body goes into the ground. With that, it's that being that is ascended. So I can ascend. It's crazy. Like, my coach helped me with this too, but I can ascend. I can sit in conversations when I can feel that warm tingle of trigger happening, where I'm getting frustrated with somebody, or they're not treating me with respect, or there's condescending tone. And I've hit this a million times with being in an executive position. There are difficult conversations I've had to navigate. Confrontation is not comfortable for me. But what I've learned to do is actually pull myself out of the moment. I make myself ascend, and I separate myself, and I try to look down on the conversation from the outside looking in. Yes, I want to see me, Mary, talking to the other person, and I want to be a third party to this conversation. And what I'm doing is I'm creating the separation so that I can give myself the power in the moment to stop the warm tingles that are leading to that fret and friction in that potential explosive, passionate, emotional trigger where things get said I don't want to say, where tone gets used that I don't want to use. And I sit and recognize that my power is in that space. And a lot of times it comes through the exercise of ascension. Learning that has changed my life, but it's easier said than done. I'm a sinful person, just like every one of us. I have flesh, you know, while I'm on earth, I do have this fleshy body. And there are things that the flesh craves. And a lot of that is unfortunate. It's either spirit or the flesh. They can't work at the same time. And it's a battle that exists in our bodies. But I don't know if that's like super weird and kumbaya to some people listening, but I'm telling you, there's so much power in it. And I hope that you can learn how to do that in conversations, because the power gets taken out of that person when they realize they're not going to get a reaction and a rise out of you, or they're not going to get what they want.
I've got goosebumps. I know that much. I'm going to have to listen back to this one. The listener might even be asking themselves, like, Ben, I know you. You came from a Jewish family. You're not incredibly religious. Why would you bring Mary on? Well, that's the exact reason I would want to bring Mary on. because I love this conversation. I have homework. I have an episode I need to re-listen to. I have darkness that maybe needs to be exposed. I'm aware of this. And I loved your book. That's another brownie point. So again, I'll buy the first three copies if someone wants to DM me, but how can someone get the book? I want to support you.
Wow. Thank you so much. First of all, I just really appreciate it. The book is sold everywhere. It's in every major book retailer. I think it's in like 39,000 stores right now. But the easiest place, we all know, number one bookseller is Amazon. Plus, that's the one where I got my bestseller status. I just went number one after 7 weeks. It ranked as a bestseller, so top 100 in three categories in the first 3 days. But I just reached number one status over the weekend. I'm so humbled by all of it. But the way that Amazon continues to say, hey, this book might be something that people would find a value and they recommend it. You know, like when you're buying stuff and you scroll down, it's like other people who purchased, fill in the blank. Like my book will show up there in recommended purchases if it continues to get reviews, get purchases, and the pages viewed. So if you don't mind purchasing it, anyone listening from Amazon, please do. Audiobook, Kindle, it's all there. And then if you feel inclined, if you liked it or if you hated it, just leave me a review. Even a one-star review helps my cause. If you really didn't like it, go on there, be vocal. A few people have, and that's okay. But on that note, the reviews, it just helped me out so much. This is the first time I've been published. I've self-published, but Forbes has been an amazing publisher. I'm so grateful for that team and everything that has come from it. And if you really, 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 really want a signed copy, I have a few copies in my house. So Ben, if you're going to do three, I'll do three signed copies as well. And I'll get those shipped out. So just let me know. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Mary Grothy. Send me a message there.
There's show notes. You can go start tapping those babies, but you can also send me a DM or Mary just mentioned, connect with her on LinkedIn, give a friendly hello, just tell her how, you know, you found her, and she's open to have a conversation with you. So we usually do a rapid fire at the end, but we're rapidly coming to a close because I wanted to give you time for the story. I have one, the rapid fire round's just random questions. I have one specific one, though, that I wanted to squeeze in at the end here. Out of all the stuff we talked about, and maybe the stuff we didn't talk about yet, what would you define as the proudest moment of your career? And you can name a couple if you want to, but what stands out? Because I think by understanding what made you most proud is a whole reflection on the whole story as a total.
That's a really difficult question for me to answer. And I understand that we're on limited time. So let me
take your time. Take your time. I don't even know why I call it the rapid fire round. It's the Ben asks what's on his mind round.
Oh, two things that come to mind. One, we won a lot of awards as a company, and I won a lot of awards as a CEO. But none of that truly mattered to me if the client wasn't winning. And I look back at 2020 and 2021, which were two of the greatest years of the 5 years that we were in business. We helped our clients achieve doubling and tripling in size, explosive growth in companies where they had been plateaued. They had tried every sales and marketing tactic there was out there. They had turnover in their VP of sales or VP of marketing seat. And they couldn't solve the revenue problem. And our team was able to do it. And we had a 100% success rate in 2020 and 2021. The scale that we did for those second stage scale companies was something, some of the most remarkable work that I've ever been a part of, and some of the most rewarding work to see a team of hungry, young revenue leaders who were inspired by my vision, loved working together. And we did the unthinkable. I think that the success that we had specifically for the second stage scale companies in those 2 years was what I look back on as the proudest moment that I can say we did a thing. And we really did something that those companies had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases trying to solve that problem and they couldn't. Mm. And we could. And that's one of the most rewarding things that I look back and I see. For me personally, I am so proud that I was able to exit the first company I had to close down. And I thought I did really good work, and I did, but I was a troubled young lady who had a lot of learning left to do. Trust me, I still have a lot of learning left to do. But the second time around, the fact that I can officially say I founded, scaled, grew a company, and officially exited in 100% stock purchase, and they have a new owner and a new CEO, two different people, but they're just flourishing. Like, to see that helps me feel like some of those hard days were really worth it. And I get to say that as a, against all odds, a young woman CEO, founder CEO, because women companies, less than 1% go over $1 million. And at our peak, we got it up above 5 million. And then to say that and to say I exited without ever taking on capital, I think that's probably one of the most impressive things that's on my resume that I did. But I think we all know now, none of that was possible without the good grace of God, because we saw me try to do that, same gifts and talents. We saw me try to do that the first time without him, and that ended up being shut down. The second time around, it was with him. And you had asked me earlier in this interview about refinement.
Yeah.
I stayed true to it, even in the hard days when I wanted to give up. With the Lord always by my side, I never felt alone, and I always felt capable, because he can do remarkable work through me if I invite him into my life and let him do it. And if I'm, if my heart is for him, then he'll give me the desires of my heart, and he is my heart, and my heart is for him. And so he knew at the end of the day, what I was seeking was not fame, glory, or a lot of money. It was to do right by people and serve people and love people, do remarkable work. That's what it says in Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do it with your heart, not for man, and you'll inherit the kingdom and you get that eternal reward. And that's what I'm in it for. Like, money will come, success will come, recognition will come. I don't live for that stuff anymore. Yeah, it feels good. And I'm still working on the fleshy side that likes it. But the biggest win at the end of the day is I did it with him, and we got a really great outcome together. And I hope that that's inspiring for people to realize there's a different way to live and a different way to do business.
You inspire me, Mary. Will you come back when you drop another book in 2025?
If you want me back, I will be back.
Is there a name for it? A name I love is Unthinkable. How a Woman Accomplish. The thought in my head is you're accomplishing the unthinkable.
Yeah, thank you.
It's probably not the name of the book, but I think it would be a great title for you.
Thank you. The two working titles right now would be Scaling Faith, because what I've known for and what I did is scaling revenue. And I've been on so many amazing stages with my keynotes about building holistic revenue engines and scaling revenue. And I love that, but people know me for that. But now as a faith-based leader and where I'm headed with my message, it's Scaling Faith is what is on the table for consideration. But at the end of the day, if I had to think about my uniqueness, and the one thing that is so different about me is I'm fearless, and I'm willing to lose it all because I already have everything that I need. And there's an aspect about how fearless I am. I am such a risk taker. I'm a crazy woman, and I am fearless in my faith. And I believe that being fearless in faith is what a lot of lukewarm and closet Christians are looking for, because they are not sure. They've been under-discipled in how to be a Christian in the workplace. And it's weird, and it's hard, and it's taboo, and it's unwelcome. But that's being Christian, isn't walking around with the Bible and quoting scripture and asking if people want to be saved today. It's being kind to people and loving them and serving them and extending that mercy and forgiveness when they don't deserve it, because it's been extended to us. It's being the hands and feet of Jesus. It's washing feet rather than throwing stones. It is a way of living where others' lives can be forever impacted and changed, and we can be the catalyst for that love and light. That is fearless faith. That is a Christian in the workplace. And I really feel like between those two working titles, that's where I'm going. But hey, I guess people will just have to follow and figure out which one I end up going with.
I'm looking forward to it. And everything you just said applies to non-Christians as well. If you aren't a Christian, why are you throwing stones? Is it that simple? I feel like everything that we need to know has already been taught, and we're just relearning it time and time again. Dang, I'm about to go another hour with you. Is there anything we missed other than everything and nothing? It was incredible spending the time with you. I had a ton of fun.
Ben, thank you so much for reaching out and having me. This has been an absolute pleasure. such an honor to be in front of your audience. I definitely recommend people follow and connect, and I hope that we can continue the conversation in a future episode.
We'll talk soon. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.